They are career politicians.
I pause and frown. What's your last name again? I heard it once, briefly, the day Holy Hellfire died, but everything was happening too fast for me to really catch it. His jaw goes taut.
Kent. My dad is Pritchard Kent.
Shit!
I can feel my face draining of color.
Language.
The chastisement barely has any energy to it, though.
He's the Speaker of the House, I whisper.
Xavier nods, apparently completely unimpressed by this fact.
Oh, God, did he invest with my dad?
I put a hand to my forehead.
No, but your father was already on my radar.
Xavier watches me gravely. I stumble back from him. He denied it in the beginning, but what if he was lying?
Oh, God, please tell me.
Dad said he'd borrowed from bad, powerful men.
Were you out for my dad all along?
Xavier shakes his head, vehemently.
No.
He takes a step forward, closing the gap between us.
But I know who is, and yes, it's someone in my father's world. Years ago, when they lent your father money and went into business with him, I knew about it because Dad and I talked about everything back then. We had a brief period of getting along.
His mouth tightens. Obviously, that didn't last too long.
He was trying to groom me to walk in his footsteps, and he didn't want me heading into the family business naive or blind to how things actually work in Washington. When I saw in the news about your father's indictment, I knew you were both in danger. I figured you and I could come to a mutually beneficial agreement, help each other out.
I lean over and put my hands on my knees.
Your dad said something about a bargain. I don't get it. What was he talking about?
Xavier rubs my back, and I'm not sure if I want to pull away from his touch or lean into it.
My grandfather was a very rich man.
Xavier's voice is short and to the point.
There's an inheritance. I live on a yearly stipend until then, but the inheritance is enough to let me continue and even expand the rescue comfortably for the rest of my life. I could have accessed the money earlier, when I was 25, as long as I sought public office, continued the family tradition.
His voice drops off, and when I turn my head, though his hand still moves methodically over my back, he's staring off into the distance.
That didn't work out,
he finally says. It's obvious there's more to the story he's glossing over, but he moves on.
I got back from the army and opened this place up. I thought I got the money when I turned 30, but no. It turns out there's a provision that I have to have a natural-born child by the time of my next birthday in order to inherit the money.
So me and the baby.
I take a sharp breath in. I guess when I thought about it, I assumed family was just something that was very important to Xavier. I never guessed it was about... that it was all part of some...
You just need to get the money?
I can't help the accusation in my voice.
Don't twist my words.
He grabs both of my hands when I try to turn away from him.
You.
He pulls me close and drops a hand to my stomach between us, his blue eyes burning into mine.
This child.
His head starts to shake back and forth.
You're nothing I ever thought I would.
He swallows and looks down. It's unlike him to be at a loss for words, and I can't help pressing.
What?
He can't close up on me now. After learning what I just did, I can't deal with vague half-truths. His eyes come back to me.
You're a dream, all right. Something I'm afraid I'll wake up from, and you'll be gone. I don't deserve this. I don't deserve you.
It's the second time he said that in the space of half an hour. What the hell is that all about? But he keeps talking, so there's no more time to unpack it.
I thought with the inheritance that maybe I could do something good. I could live out my life in peace without hurting anyone. Maybe help some old horses. Then I found out about the air claws.
His nostrils flare.
And then there was you.
The intensity of his gaze is making my stomach curl, with warmth and love and the lingering embers of the orgasms he gave me not 15 minutes ago. But there are still so many questions. So what does all this have to do with your father? Does he get the money if you don't? Xavier's mouth tightens, a sure sign I'm hitting a nerve.
If I don't have a child, my father can direct the money toward the political super PACs and political charities of his choosing. So while he doesn't get the money per se, he's still invested in the outcome of where it goes. But I guess...
He kicks at the grass, another very out-of-place gesture for my usually so-in-control man.
He still thinks he might be able to spend that money on my candidacy.
My eyes pop open at that. Xavier's...
What?
My father was never happy with the career path I've chosen. He was very invested in me joining the family business. and I was a rank-and-file soldier who went along.
He tilts his head back and forth,
if a bit grudgingly at times. He's still got it in his head that all of this is a phase.
He nods out at the land, then back at the stable.
Not to mention, this is not the face of a politician. You can't exactly kiss babies when one look at you makes them scream.
Now I'm the one scoffing. It's not that at all. It's just that I can't even imagine you in a suit. I try to circle one of his muscular biceps using both of my hands, and they still don't touch. Do they even make suits in your size? I shake my head. God, I just can't picture you anywhere but out here in the open air. You have such a sense with the horses. You're so natural with them. I can't stop shaking my head. It's too strange an image to even try to compute.
I've told him enough times that this is my future, my only future. When I had my lawyer look into the inheritance issue right after I turned 29 last year, I was shocked to find out about the stipulation that I had to have a child for the inheritance to pass to me.
His voice takes on a lower, growling quality.
Dad knew the whole time. He kept it from me because he was trying to force me back into politics, so I'd effectively have to depend on him for my livelihood through his influence and financing of my campaigns. He said we could play off my deformity for votes because in Afghanistan I was an American hero.
He spits the last words like they're filthy curse words. His hand is fisted, and when I look closer, I see that his whole arm is shaking. What the hell happened to him over there? Xavier. I reach out to him, but he turns his broad back to me.
No.
I can't help flinching. It hurts. God, it hurts that he won't open up to me.
I just can't, precious.
His voice sounds ragged, raw.
Please don't ask me.
I sigh deeply, feeling overwhelmed by this entire conversation. All right, I guess we should go in. Then I look over my shoulder toward the pastures behind us. I haven't brought in sugar yet or brushed her down.
She's fine.
Xavier's voice still sounds off, but it gains strength as he talks about the more mundane topic of his horses.
I leave her out to pasture for whole weeks sometimes in the summer. Let's just go try to survive this dinner.
We take a few steps before something else occurs to me, and I stop again. Wait, so when do you turn 30? He's still faced away from me when he answers.
December 23rd.
I gape. That means... if I hadn't gotten pregnant when I did, that would have been it. Inheritance lost. He only ever had 2 months to get me pregnant. And apart from a couple tries, he basically wasted the whole first month I was here. What the fuck? I assumed it was because he had all the time in the world, but he only had 2 months, and he... Why? I tug on his arm. There's no way my tiny pull would move him, but he turns back at the pressure. His eyes meet mine, and he obviously reads the meaning of my question in my face.
I needed to know you would be safe, before we really tried.
That I would be safe? What is that? My first impulse is to be insulted. He needed me to be a dog begging at his feet for scraps. But, no, that doesn't feel exactly right. He never gave me just scraps. He fed me richly. He's taken care of my every need. Sumptuously. His nightly massages in the bath, touching me whenever we're near, holding me so close after his nightmares. He's needed me, too. Suddenly a barrage of things he's told me over the months come flooding back like one of those cheesy montages in a movie.
I've been training you because I wanted you to stay, so I could keep you.
When he talked about sugar that time...
She was always a sweet girl underneath. She just had to learn how to trust. It took a while for me to break through with her.
And
trust is the most precious gift you can give to any being.
After those first couple of attempts, he realized he wasn't willing to have a baby with me until he could trust me. And that whole begging for his cock thing? Well, there was no better way to prove that I trusted him than allowing him to be intimate with me. But he had so much to lose. Turns out, everything was on the line. It mattered that much to you? I ask him. I can still barely wrap my head around the idea that he gambled so much on me. Did I trust you first?
There was no point otherwise.
My mouth drops open. That's insane. What if I hadn't come around in time? The right side of his mouth hitches up.
No chance. You were panting every time I came into the room. You licked your lips when I took off my shirt, and you couldn't keep your eyes off my ass.
I make an outraged noise, and the smile teasing at his lips turns into a full-out grin. He wraps his arms low around my waist, and then yanks me up and against him. I gasp in a deep breath and lift my hands to his shoulders.
"Yep,"
he says, leaning in, his breath warm on my ear.
"A little like how you're panting right now."
He's joking and playing it off, but still. He had so little chance to start with. Only 2 months. 2 opportunities to get me pregnant, 2 of my eggs. If he was only concerned about the money and securing the inheritance, then the smartest move would have been for him to screw anything with a viable uterus and spread his seed far and wide, or even to have gone the scientific route and fertilized a bunch of eggs in a lab for surrogacy. But no, not my Xavier. He hikes me up just enough so that his rapidly growing hard-on digs into the perfect spot between my legs. He drops his head to kiss me, and I lick my lips to moisten them in anticipation. He grins in the way that takes my breath away.
"Just proving my point, precious."
I startle, then realize I just licked my lips. Annoyed, I start to push him away, but he just chuckles and lands the most loin-tingling, soul-searing kiss. I'm half crawling up him by the time he pulls away, still chuckling, but also with lust darkening his blue eyes.
"If my father weren't waiting and no doubt spying on us out the kitchen windows, I would drag you to the ground right here."
I groan as he sets me back on my feet and starts leading me toward the house. Dinner is an awkward affair, as I might have imagined. I fill in with mindless chit-chat about life on the farm. Xavier's father tries to look interested, but I can tell it's a strain to keep his attention focused on our equine feeding schedules, or even how Xavier is training Samson. "It's really incredible," I continue gushing. "He was completely wild only a few months ago, and now he's gentle as a kitten when Xavier's got his hands on him." Xavier scoffs.
"I don't know about that. He's still got some snap in him. He about took my finger off when I approached him from the right flank the other day."
I raise my eyebrows in surprise, and Pritchard drinks some of his ice water, clearly biting back some comment. "You haven't worked on that side as much, I guess." I look to his dad. "I didn't know this before I came here, but apparently ideas and things they learn don't automatically transfer between both spheres of their brains like they do for humans. So if you teach a horse a skill from the left side, you have to teach him the same skill starting from scratch on the right side. Totally crazy. I had no idea." Xavier nods.
"Ranchers joke it's like getting 2 horses every time."
I shake my head. "I can't believe I never knew that. It just seems like one of those fun facts people would talk about all the time." Xavier jokingly talks about Samson as lefty and righty, as in, "Oh, I spent the day with lefty today." "Guess you need to focus on spending some time with righty then." I smile at him. Xavier inclines his head before shoveling in a huge bite of shepherd's pie. I'm really happy with how it came out today. Since I've gotten pregnant and don't have to work so hard out on the ranch, I've taken to experimenting in the kitchen. Well, at least the past couple of weeks, once the first trimester was over and the smell of meat didn't send me running for the nearest bathroom. This is one of my favorite recipes because it's hard to screw up. It's the 3rd time we've had it in the last 2.5 weeks. What? So I'm slowly expanding my menu of things I can cook. I grew up in New York, where takeout was a major food group. It's also a bit odd to be using a fork and feeding myself. God, it's the first time in months and it feels a bit, well, unsettling and lonely being so separate from Xavier all the way over there at the head of the table with his father sitting across from me. I can't believe him feeding me has become such a source of comfort and connection after how much I fought it in the beginning. The few times I catch Xavier looking at me, his eyes focused on my fork disappearing between my lips, I wonder if he isn't thinking something similar.
"So, son,"
Pritchard says, after Xavier's midway through his second helping,
"what will it take you to come back home?"
Xavier's fork only pauses briefly on its way to his mouth. Behind him, I notice it start to rain outside. He continues to take his bite, chewing normally, and washes it down with his water. He has beer in the fridge, and I'm surprised he didn't want to take the slightest edge off for this meal with his father. I take a sip of water as I look back and forth between the two men like I'm at a tennis match. Oh dear, is this where all the yelling starts? But Xavier only says with an easy smile,
"I am home, Dad."
Pritchard gives a half roll of his eyes and puts his napkin down on the table after wiping his mouth.
Be serious. Your mother and I indulged you long enough with this horse farm fantasy, but it's time to grow up, especially now that you'll be starting a family.
He gestures in my direction.
Leave Melanie out of this, Xavier says.
It's shocking to hear him use my name. I think that's the first time I've ever heard him even say it out loud.
I won't change my mind on this, Dad. You need to let it go. I left that path a long time ago.
Pritchard exhales loudly and sits back in his chair.
Why? That's what I don't understand. Sure, what happened over there was unfortunate, but it wasn't your fault. Stop.
Xavier's voice is cold.
No, I won't stop, his father continues earnestly. I've talked to some doctors, and they say you have all the classic symptoms of PTSD and survivor's guilt. But it wasn't your fault all those people died. You weren't even directly involved in the Quran burnings. You just happened to be in command of those men. Stop.
Xavier's jaw is working, and I can tell he's barely managing his usually easy control. His father just continues on, oblivious or too desperate to press the subject. I can't tell.
Then with the insanity of the riot, I understand. Really, I do. I know you find it difficult to believe, but in Vietnam, You were a Ramph in Nam, Dad.
Xavier explodes, standing up and pushing his chair back. I startle and grab the table's edge. I've never seen him so worked up, apart from the moments after one of his nightmares.
Just like you tried to make me in Afghanistan. Station the boy in the center of a green zone at a big airbase so he can get some military experience.
Xavier spits out the words mockingly.
Looks great for the future political career, but keep him safe from any of the actual shit of war. Well, guess what, Dad? My fancy Ivy League education didn't help me when the protesters were at the gate throwing acid at anyone wearing a military uniform. And I was one of the fucking lucky ones. I came home with a fucking heartbeat.
Oh my God. Xavier, I cry, stepping forward. The rain has been picking up and thunder rumbles so loud it seems to shake the house. Or maybe that's just everything that's been revealed in the last few minutes. Xavier yanks back from me.
I've got to check on the horses. Stay here.
He turns and stomps out the door, grabbing his coat and hat before slamming it behind him. Xavier's father sits down heavily in his chair at the table and sinks his head in his hands. I wonder just how old he is, and if Xavier isn't wrong about his motivations for coming here. Sure, he might still have political aspirations for his son. You don't get to his position in American politics without being an extremely motivated man. But maybe he just wants his son back, too. Men. I sigh, thinking of how my own father spent his life trying to protect me because he loved me, but ended up screwing things up so royally. Why couldn't he have just said the words? I love you. 3 simple words that seem so impossible for these emotionally stunted men. The words Xavier has yet to say to me. I walk toward the door, looking at Xavier's retreating shape through the heavy sheets of rain. I press my hand to the glass. More than anything, I want to run after him, but I have the feeling he needs to be alone. I turn back and look at his dad. So what exactly happened? There were protests at the airbase, and... I gulp down tears. Someone threw acid at him? Pritchard looks up at me, bags that I didn't notice before, heavy underneath his eyes.
He's right. I did send him there because I thought it would look good for his career. But if I'd had any idea...
His face crumbles and he looks away from me.
If I'd known, it would have lost me my son.
His voice trails off. After a few long seconds, he finally continues, still facing away from me.
He went to Afghanistan as a commissioned officer, a lieutenant. He was a good officer. He was always a natural leader. Probably why we got into as many scuffles as we did during his growing up.
He shakes his head.
He was only there 2 months when it happened. Barely any time to get his feet wet, and no chance at all to really get a feel for the place. No one blamed him.
What happened? I press.
He was stationed at the detention center at the base. Not a top position, but he had responsibility enough. He was smart, and he discovered Taliban prisoners were using their religious text as a means of communicating with each other. They were writing notes in the margins of the Qurans in the prison's library. Xavier reported it and had his men remove the Qurans.
Pritchard's head bows.
Well, apparently some of them thought that removing the Qurans meant sending them to the incinerator, not just taking them out of circulation and sending them up the line of command.
I frown. Okay. Pritchard finally turns and looks at me.
You don't get it.
Burning a holy book is enough to start a jihad over there.
Oh, no. My stomach sinks. I'm starting to get where this is going.
Some Afghan workers on base saw the Qurans in the incinerator pile and pulled them out, half-burned.
He closes his eyes.
They told the Afghan guards and went to the press. The entire country started rioting. The airbase itself was taking a constant barrage of petrol bombs and stones. One of the Afghan soldiers the Americans were training within the gates started shooting American soldiers before being shot down. Another threw open the gate to the rioters. 7 American soldiers died at that site alone. Some of the rioters had bottles of acid.
I step back, a fist to my mouth, but Pritchard's not done.
Xavier shouldn't have even been there.
He shakes his head, devastated eyes beseeching mine.
He was stationed inside the detention facility, but as soon as he realized what had happened and that the facility was surrounded by protesters and rioters, he immediately went to the front lines of the airbase's defenses.
He drinks down the rest of his water like it's a shot glass.
Damn fool.
I look toward the door. Hero, I whisper. Then I look back at him. But none of it was his fault. His father laughs darkly.
Try telling him that. He blames himself for not stressing to those under his command how holy documents should be treated, for not walking the Qurans personally to HQ after he discovered them.
He gestures toward the door.
For living when other men died. You heard him.
I look out the window. It's raining even harder now, and lightning flashes, illuminating the dark sky. It should only be near twilight, but with the storm, it looks to be full dark. Where is Xavier? Is he having trouble with the horses? I cross my arms and then stop and look down, surprised, like I am all the time, by my suddenly larger stomach. Oh, sweet little baby. What hell did your father live through? And what torment does he still go through daily, blaming himself for things he had no control over? I go to the window and look out, trying to see if I can get a glimpse of Xavier between the flashes of lightning that are coming at regular intervals. Thunder cracks almost as quickly. God, the storm must be right on top of us. But it's not so loud that when the gunshot rings out, both Pritchard and I don't know it for exactly what it is. Chapter 20.
Oh my God!
I shout and throw open the door. Pritchard is on my heels, but I don't wait for him as I sprint into the darkness. Mud sucks at my boots with every step I take, but I press on.
What the hell was that? Who would have a gun out here?
Xavier. Xavier has a gun.
Did a wolf or bear get close to one of the horses?
But I would have thought in a storm they'd haul up, not come near a house. Unless they got their directions all screwed up and... As I get closer to the stable, I hear the most bone-chilling noise. It's a scream, but not human. It's a horse. I run even faster. I throw open the barn door. The lights are on, and all the horses are stomping madly, but Xavier's not there. The opposite door is open, though, and slanting sheets of rain pour into the stable. I sprint through the barn, the light making me squint after the darkness, wiping water off my forehead, only to hit the wall of water once I burst out the other side. The horrible horse scream greets me again once I exit the stable, and that's when I see a sight that will forever haunt me. Not 15 feet in front of me is Xavier facing off with Samson, holding a pistol straight out in front of him while Samson rears up on his hind legs.
No!
I scream and run forward. I'm not sure if I mean for Xavier not to shoot the horse or for Samson not to land and trample Xavier. Either way, Xavier looks over at me, and his entire demeanor changes. He lowers the pistol and races toward me.
What the hell are you doing?
He shouts, shoving me behind him as he faces Samson. I can barely hear him above the rain.
Get back in the house.
What's going on?
I shout back.
Why do you have a gun?
Samson rears up once more and then settles, stamping and shuffling backward. It's only then that I see Sugar moving along the side of the pasture fence not far away, and... Is she limping?
What the hell happened out here? Did Samson hurt her?
Xavier keeps his body between me and Samson, all the while facing the horse. With one arm on me, he shuffles us backward toward the barn. With the other, he lifts the gun at Samson again, jaw like iron. When Samson takes a step toward us, he cocks the gun.
Stop it!
I shout, grabbing his arm holding the gun. He immediately lowers it and turns on me, lifting me over his shoulder and walking briskly for the barn. As soon as he gets me inside, he puts me down on my feet.
"Don't you ever put our baby in harm's way like that again,"
he shouts at me.
"What the fuck were you thinking? Are you a fucking idiot? How many times have I told you not to approach a horse when they are upset or you aren't in control of the situation? That horse could have killed you both."
I stand tall and strong in front of him, even though he towers over me and is screaming at the top of his considerable lungs. "Put the gun down," I say calmly. It's only then that he realizes he's been waving a loaded gun at me while he rants. He freezes, and I can see the absolute horror as it hits him. It's like he just shuts down. An inhuman calmness takes over. He lowers the weapon and uncocks it, then clicks the safety on and puts it in the back of his pants. We're both soaking and breathing hard, but suddenly his breaths even out, like he flipped some kind of switch.
I should have gelded Samson as soon as I got him on the property. Keeping him as a stallion for even a few months was a foolhardy and sentimental decision.
He speaks in such a monotone that he sounds like a robot.
He broke out of his paddock and mated with Sugar, injuring her in the process. I should have foreseen something like this happening. I failed her, just like I failed so many before.
"Xavier," I start, but he cuts me off.
"It's not safe for you to stay here."
"What?" I exclaim. "That's ridiculous. We'll get Samson gelded and..." He gives a hard, decisive shake no.
"The problem isn't Samson. It's me. I fail those who rely on me, and the consequences..."
His jaw goes tight and his sight distant, like he's seeing something far beyond the stable. After a moment, he refocuses.
"I thought with this place, if I could just control enough factors, if I could train them correctly from the start..."
He looks around at the stable, and for the briefest moment, I think I see longing enter his eyes before they go dead again.
"But no. First Hellfire, now Sugar. I'll always fail them."
Then he looks at me.
"God forbid anyone entrust a human to me. It was bad enough that I already endangered you and the baby when I cut out after Hellfire."
He shakes his head.
"Leaving you to do all the work, you could have lost the baby. But did I even consider that? No."
His eyes are darting everywhere, unfocused.
"You will leave with my father tonight."
My mouth drops open. "I will not." I laugh out a disbelieving scoff. "You're insane if you think I'll..." Suddenly, he's whipped the gun out again. Only this time, he's pointing it at his own head.
"Xavier!"
I scream. He unclicks the safety and cocks it.
"I'm having a hard enough time believing I deserve to be in this world at all. I should have died that day in Afghanistan. Those men were killed right in front of me because of something I caused. It should have been me."
"Xavier, stop it. Put the gun down. We're going to have a baby,"
I cry. Tears pour down my cheeks.
"Oh, God, how can he be saying these things? How can the man who's stronger than anyone else I know believe this of himself?"
"I can't hurt anyone else,"
he whispers, desperation entering his voice. For a brief moment, I can see the man I love breaking through this deadened facade he's trying to portray.
"Especially not you or our baby."
"Give me the gun, Xavier." I try to swallow my tears. "We had a fucked up start, okay? I'm not going to romanticize it. You bringing me here like you did was majorly fucked up." He nods, like I'm making his point for him. I shake my head vehemently. "But getting to know you, to love you, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me." I can see in the way his eyes shudder and his face closes down that I'm losing him again, so I press on. I always thought that submission meant weakness. I grew up thinking the only way I'd make it in the world was on my own, because no one was ever going to help me, not even my own father. I never believed I could belong anywhere. I had to be strong on my own terms, always, 24/7. I could never let my guard down for even a second. I take a step toward him when I see what looks like the slightest bit of hesitation on his face. Am I getting through to him? Oh God, please let him hear me. "Do you know how exhausting living that way was? I didn't even realize it until you started breaking down my walls and showing me a different way." I have to make him understand. He has to understand. "You showed me how lonely and empty a life is without real connection. We're wired to connect, but that's only possible if we open ourselves up to trust. And God..." Tears course down my cheeks. "That was so goddamn terrifying.
I fought you tooth and nail every step of the way, making myself vulnerable enough to trust you, to trust anyone, after what my mother did to me, or even Dad, how he pushed me away my whole life, even though he thought it was for my own good. You gave me the gift of learning how to trust, and now I'll be able to pass that on to our son or daughter.
Don't come any closer,
Xavier says, blinking rapidly. His hand, holding the gun, starts to shake so badly I'm terrified he'll accidentally pull the trigger.
You're stronger than me. You always were. I knew it from the start.
His voice is strained, like every word is gutting him. At least I'm not talking to a zombie anymore. I shake my head, taking another step toward him.
I'm sorry I didn't see how much you've been hurting. We can work through this. You have to trust me now.
Stay back,
he yells, his eyes wide and neck so taut with tension all the veins are standing out.
I hurt everyone around me. I swore I'd protect you and I will, even if it's from myself.
Oh my God. No! Okay, give me the gun and I'll go.
Something is seriously wrong with Xavier, and it's bigger than me or logic or maybe even love, a poison that's been warping his perception of himself and the world ever since what happened in Afghanistan. Right now, the only priority is to get that gun away from him. I'll go with your father. We'll leave, okay? Just give me the gun. I can't leave without knowing you're going to be okay. Behind Xavier, I see his father step forward from behind the horse stalls. He raises a finger over his lips as he approaches his son from the back. I'm doing what you wanted, I try to soothe. I'll go, but you have to give me the gun. I won't leave unless you give me the gun. His dad is almost to him, just a little bit closer. Xavier shakes his head rapidly back and forth, and I see tears forming at the edge of his eyes.
You and the baby have to be safe from me. This is the only way.
His finger twitches on the trigger.
Xavier, no!
I shout. His dad lurches forward in the same moment as the shot rings out. Chapter 21.
Push. You're doing great. Just give us another good push.
The perky 25-year-old blonde nurse encourages.
I fucking hate you!
I shout and then bear down.
Fuck!
Oh, you're a feisty one, perky nurse enthuses. Her actual name is Christy or Kelly or something.
Your baby is going to need all that wonderful energy as soon as he comes out.
Oh my God, this woman is unflappable, no matter how many obscenities I shout at her. Turns out the first words my son hears in this world are going to be the four-letter kind because, yeah, pain brings out the potty mouth in me. Which brings a pang that feels almost as wrenching as the pain currently splitting me in half, because I can just imagine his father leaning over me and growling,
language.
But little Dean's father isn't here. I think Dean is a good name. Pritchard told me that Xavier always hated how fancy the first names in their family were. So Dean sounded like a good, simple, solid name. Not having Xavier here to meet his son when he's born, I can't... It's just... Oh, shit, here comes another one.
Where's my goddamn motherfucking epidural?
You know you're too far dilated at this point for an epidural.
Perky McPerky Fuck reminds me.
Now push, you're almost there.
Oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit!
I yell, then take a breath and push while the pain rips through me. The doctor holds one ankle while the other's in the stirrup.
He's crowning, the doctor announces. Keep pushing.
Fucking fuck!
I scream.
That's right, precious. You scream your head off.
What? How did...
But it's him. Xavier's here.
He's not supposed to get out of the PTSD treatment facility for another 3 weeks, but he's here. In a fresh gown and ridiculous cap and mask they make people wear to be in the delivery room.
How are...
I start to ask, but then I'm racked by another contraction.
Push, precious.
He comes to my side and grabs my hand.
I love you so much.
Tears explode down my cheeks. With how hard I'm pushing, no body fluid is graceful at the moment. Is he really here, or is this some pain-induced hallucination? I haven't laid eyes on him for 3 months. When his father tackled him, the gunshot went askew into the ceiling of the barn, thank God. But it was enough to convince Xavier to submit himself to a treatment facility his father had found in upstate New York. After a few weeks, he had something of a breakthrough and got clear-headed enough to realize just how much he'd almost lost. Then he became so dedicated to getting better, he took the doctor's suggestion to really commit to the intensive inpatient treatment program, one that had no contact with the outside world, to my dismay. In our last conversation, he promised he would come out and be the man that I and our son or daughter deserved.
I'm so fucking sorry I couldn't tell you those words before. I love you and I love our son. Precious, we're about to meet our son.
He laughs and sounds so young and free. I blink through my tears to look up at him. He's never been more gorgeous to me. His blue eyes have tears glistening at the edges, too.
Because of you. Because of how fucking amazing you are.
The doctor asks Xavier if he wants to take my other ankle. He looks to me and I nod. I can't take my eyes off him as I push.
He's crowning, the doctor announces. Keep pushing.
I grit my teeth and push. Xavier squeezes my ankle.
Precious, he's almost here. Holy Christ, you're doing it.
Our son. Our son. His eyes flip back and forth between me and watching for our son. One last big push, calls the doctor.
You can do it, Xavier encourages. I love you. I love you.
I take a huge breath and then push with every bit of energy I have. When that's gone, I borrow the rest from Xavier, who's infusing me with his strength through his touch. And I push our son into the world. Epilogue.
Dada, Dada.
Dean toddles across the stable to Xavier as soon as he comes in with Samson.
Horsey, up, up, horsey.
I laugh as I run forward and scoop Dean into my arms before he runs straight into Samson's giant hooves. All the horses are good around Dean. As soon as the baby was born, the first thing Xavier did when we got home from the hospital was immediately start doubling down on training the horses on their halt commands. He trained them in every conceivable situation with dolls and with recordings of baby cries, squeals, and shouts. Every hour that wasn't spent with us was spent out with the horses. He had loops of baby noises on repeat in the stable while he groomed them, rode them, put them out to the paddock or pasture for the day. You name it, there was a non-stop baby soundtrack on. The vet, Tom, had helped out while Xavier was away and I was pregnant by lending us Carlos, his intern for the summer. Carlos stayed at the resort rent-free and took care of the horses in the morning and evening after his rounds with Tom. He was still with us after we got home from the hospital, and the baby soundtrack about drove him crazy. He constantly wore earplugs. I think he was more than happy to say goodbye to us when his time with Tom was done and he went back to the city for school. At the facility where Xavier spent several months, they worked with him on his need to control every little detail of a situation. He continues to work on it, but argues that training horses is still about constant repetition. He has bi-weekly calls with his doctor to discuss boundaries. And if you think that means he's given up his love of discipline in and out of the bedroom when it comes to me, think again. Case in point.
Mommy's looking a bit hungry, don't you think, big boy? I think it's time to take her in and feed her.
Yep, while occasionally I get to feed myself, most meals still come from his hand. And, yeah, I kind of love it now.
Horsey,
is Dean's response. Xavier scoops Dean out of my arms and hefts him up to Samson's long nose. Dean immediately starts to blow on Samson's nose. Samson blows back, and Dean lets out a peal of giggles. He does it again and gets the same response. It's become a game between them. I roll my eyes. Dean's only 22 months old and is already horse crazy. I rue the day he actually starts riding. Naturally, Xavier is already talking about getting him a small pony. Which shows how far he's come, because there's so much you can't control when it comes to animals. He about had a fit when I wanted to get back on a horse 4 months after giving birth. While there have been some bumpy moments, overall, things have been wonderful. The time at the clinic finally helped Xavier face his demons. His nightmares are only very occasional now, and he's able to talk about them in a way he wouldn't before. The clinic helped him begin to believe that what happened at the airbase wasn't his fault, and to work through his survivor's guilt and his PTSD. His relationship with his parents? Well, it's still a work in progress. Pritchard still lives in D.C. for most of the year, but he and Xavier's mom fly out every couple months to spend time with their grandson. Pritchard and Xavier have even managed to have a few civil conversations when I wasn't present to referee. My dad? We talk almost every day over Skype. We have a vacation to the Maldives planned for later this year. The first time I'll see him since it all began, and the first time he'll get to meet his grandson face to face. Does it suck he has to live in exile all his life? Yes. But at the same time, what he did wasn't a victimless crime. While a lot of the people defrauded by him were rich Wall Street assholes, there were plenty of regular folks who lost their pensions too in his scam. At least I'm protected by Xavier's father's name, and the fact that no one else knows where Dad is and he stays disappeared. In the meantime, he enjoys fishing every day and has taken up pottery and painting. I'm sad he'll never get to know his amazing grandson beyond talking to him on a screen a few minutes a day, but my focus is on my new family. Family. Something I never thought would be an important part of my life at all. And now it's everything. Progress all around.
Okay, time to say bye to Horsey, Xavier says.
Dean starts to whine, but Xavier just gives him a look. The serious dad look. Ugh, that never works for me. Probably because whenever I look at my son, who is an absolutely adorable, tiny, little version of his father, I'm always far too tempted to give in to him. And he knows it, and now tries to manipulate me and game the system. Smart little punk. Huh, who am I kidding? He's not little. He's in the 99th growth percentile for his age. He was a 10-pound baby to start with. About Tormian, too. Xavier actually had a reason for being concerned about me writing. Well, not being that concerned. But it did take me longer than average to heal. I told him he had another thing coming if he thought I was birthing an army of kids. Maybe one more. Well, that's what I say until I see Xavier with Dean and I'm like, damn, I want a passel of these. We'll see. As we head up toward the house, Dean drops his head on Xavier's shoulder, his pudgy little cheek flattening in a way that's so goddamned adorable I think my heart might split down the center. His eyelids flutter and then close. I think it might be time for someone's nap, I whisper as Xavier opens the back door to the kitchen. Which is good, because we're supposed to go to Tom and Janine's later, and it'll be much better if Dean is well rested. They've become close friends over the past couple of years, even if Janine can be a bit hard to take sometimes. She's more than a bit bitter about living out here in Wyoming. Tom was being generous when he explained the situation that day when he came for Hellfire. I try to be a friend to her, but frankly, both Xavier and I feel bad for Tom. Xavier's solution is for Tom to invest in a good riding crop. I rolled my eyes at that suggestion. I hope that they're able to either work it out or, as hard as it might be, decide to go their separate ways. I don't see the point in them continuing to make each other miserable like they are now.
Nap time. My thoughts exactly, Xavier says, bringing me back to the moment. He steps inside with Dean. Let me just run him up to his room.
He does just that, walking smoothly so he doesn't wake the kiddo up. Not much chance of that. One good thing about living on a farm, Dean spends his days running around outside, so he always naps and sleeps hard at night. I set up a late afternoon lunch while Xavier's upstairs. Just some sandwiches and chocolate pudding I whipped up earlier. I cut the sandwiches into squares. Then I take off all my clothes and position myself on the plush cushion at the foot of the head chair. It's rare to have the resort all to ourselves like this. After Carlos left, we've continued hosting volunteers to help out so we can take on even more horses in need. But Carolyn, our current intern, is visiting family for a couple of weeks, and I intend to take full advantage of the time alone.
He went down easy, no problem at...
Xavier's words freeze in his throat when he sees me.
Well, what do we have here?
Your pet is awaiting her meal, Master. A low growl is all I get in response. His feet scrape across the kitchen tile as he prowls toward me.
Is that right?
His voice is low, predatory. He sits in the chair in front of me.
I've missed playing with my favorite pet. It's been far too long.
I swallow hard, my sex clenching as moisture gathers. Yes, Master. I think he'll start with a sandwich, but instead it's a glob of pudding he shoves in my mouth.
Suck,
he commands, voice harsh. I suck for all I'm worth. He hisses out a low breath. And then he does something he rarely does. I hear the sound of his buckle being undone, and then, my head still down, I see his pants drop to his ankles. My breath gets short in anticipation. Usually these dinner games always end with him dragging me upstairs, to the bath or the bed. I wait for his finger to descend with more chocolate. Instead, his chair scrapes on the tile as he shoves backward from the table. He grabs my upper arms and pulls me forward.
"Suck,"
he growls. And that's when I see he's coated the tip of his long, glorious cock in chocolate pudding. I don't need any more encouragement. I lean forward, about to eagerly gobble him up when I hesitate at the last second. Instead, I extend the tip of my tongue and lick the chocolate just from the very tip of his slit. He hisses, and his cock bobs toward me. My core starts to melt at seeing his reaction, and my sex gets even wetter. If I was wearing panties, they'd be soaked. Tentatively, I lick all around his crown. Teasing licks. Tasting, then retreating.
"I said, suck,"
he says. But when I continue to nibble and smear my lips with chocolate and his essence without ever fully taking him into my mouth, he simply sits back in his chair and watches me through hooded eyes. The only way I know I'm affecting him at all is the occasional hitch in his breathing and the way his cock jumps every so often under my torturous explorations.
"God damn it,"
he finally whispers, and I realize his fingers are white-knuckled on the side of the chair. Only then do I bob my entire head down on his cock and swallow him so deep I'm choking on him. But I love it, knowing I'm driving him absolutely insane after the long session of teasing him. I massage his balls as his hands come to my hair. I think he's going to hold me down while he starts pumping up and down into my throat, but instead, no. He's getting my attention to lift me off of him. I raise up, a little confused.
"Ride me, precious."
His pupils are blown with lust, and that's when I realize his cock is longer and harder than I've almost ever seen it. "Oh," I whisper as he lifts me by my waist and settles my aching sex down on his huge cock.
"Oh, God, you're hung like a horse."
He laughs, that low, throaty chuckle of his that I adore.
"Not quite,"
he says,
"which I bet you're grateful for. Now hush and let me love you."
I meet his eyes, and I swear, if there were any corner of my heart this man hadn't already conquered, yeah, I'd be a goner right here, right now. As it is, I lost all of myself to him a long time ago. He holds me, chest to chest, impaling me so deep that with every thrust he hits that spot. I gasp, and he kisses me, swallowing it. "I love you," I whisper between kisses.
"Love you too, precious. Forever and always."
Please consider leaving a review at the audible.com website. Even one or two sentences can make a huge difference in increasing the visibility of this independently published title. Join Stasia Black's Facebook fan group for deleted scenes, exclusive giveaways, and more. Stasia Black's Reading Corner. Want to get news about all upcoming releases and the opportunities to access free, advanced reader's copies of all my future books? No spam, ever. www.stasiablack.com/contact. Other novels by Stasia Black: Crush Me, Please Me, Woman Named Red, Daddy's Sweet Girl, and look for Hunter, the next novel in the Stud Ranch series, available in audio in early 2018. Acknowledgements. Amy Bowyer, like always, you are my magical unicorn beta reader, and this book was no exception. Thank you for working on crazy timelines even when your own life was upended to get this one back to me on a tight deadline. You always help me shape my stories and characters into deeper, more meaningful places. Trisha Wolf, thank you again for reading while you're on insane deadlines. Your feedback helped me with the last touch-ups to make this thing solid. And I can't wait to read your next book. I need it now. Belinda Donaldson, thank you for your amazing, lightning-fast read on this one. I'm always so nervous sending my books out to my first few readers, and your quick response and encouragement means so much. This book would be an ugly mess of miscapitalizations, grammar mistakes, and missing words without the proofreading genius of Maria Pease from the Paisley Editor. She's awesome. Fellow authors, highest recommendations. And thanks as always to Super Hubby, love of my life, Shine in my star, Google in my Googleplex. Love you to friggin' pieces. About Stasia. Stasia Black is an author who's drawn to romantic stories that don't take the easy way out. She wants to see beneath people's veneer and into their dark places, their twisted motives, and their deepest desires. She likes to toss her characters into the tempest and watch them hurt, fight, bleed, and then find out what, if anything, comes out the other side. Come along for the journey, because it's one hell of a ride. This has been The Virgin and the Beast, a dark erotic Beauty and the Beast tale, written by Stasia Black, read for you by Cameron O'Malley. Copyright 2017 by Stasia Black. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.